The Voice They Couldn't Silence, Galina Vishnevskaya at 100. By Opera Wire admin twin May 1962, three singers were supposed to stand together inside the newly consecrated Coventry Cathedral. Benjamin Britten had chosen the English tenor Peter Pears, German baritone Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau, and Russian soprano Galina Vishnevskaya for the premiere of his War Requiem. The casting carried powerful post-war symbolism, three nationalities united in a cathedral destroyed during the Second World War and rebuilt as a monument to reconciliation. Yet when the work received its premiere, Vishnevskaya was missing. The Soviet authorities had refused her permission to travel. This was not the last time politics attempted to contain her voice. On Oct. 25, the operatic world marks the centenary of Galina Vishnevskaya, one of the 20th century's most formidable sopranos. A Balshi star who inspired Britten and Shostakovich, she eventually came into direct conflict with the Soviet state that had celebrated her. Yet the extraordinary events of Vishnevskaya's biography can obscure what made her important as an operatic artist. She did not merely possess a remarkable voice. She brought to opera an almost theatrical conception of character, in which psychological individuality mattered as much as vocal beauty. Again and again, the women she inhabited on stage seemed to acquire something of Vishnevskaya herself, a restless individuality and an unwillingness to accept the roles imposed upon them. Remaking the Russian heroine. Vishnevskaya rapidly became one of the Balshi Theater's greatest assets, performing nearly 30 roles on its stage. By the early 1960s, appearances in the United States, Covent Garden, and La Scala had made her not merely a Balshi star, but a representative of Soviet cultural prestige abroad. Yet these international milestones tell us relatively little about what happened when Vishnevskaya walked onto a stage. During her quarter century at the Balshi, Vishnevskaya altered the dramatic temperature of the standard Russian operatic heroine. Tatiana and Lisa in T. Tchaikovsky, Marfa in The Tsar's Bride, and Natasha in War and Peace were established characters. Vishnevskaya remade them through the force of her own dramatic personality. Vishnevskaya did not simply inherit these women. Her heroines seemed younger, more restless, and acutely conscious of themselves. Tatiana's lyrical femininity did not preclude willfulness. Lisa became more than a tragic victim. Vishnevskaya resisted neat character types, giving her heroines a contradictory interior life, and with it, the possibility of rebellion. Poulenc's La Voix Humaine concentrated the same instinct. With little separating singer and audience from its abandoned heroine, Vishnevskaya brought an almost uncomfortable psychological immediacy to the role. Here, her operatic world approached dramatic theater. The seemingly solid wall separating opera from theater, cinema, and television in the 1950s and 1960s became more permeable. Voice and gesture became inseparable from character. Nowhere was this approach more forceful than in Shostakovich's Katerina Ismailova, A Voice for Britten and Shostakovich. Although prevented from appearing at the premiere of Britten's War Requiem, Vishnevskaya became closely associated with the work, recording it the following year under Britten. Her relationship with Shostakovich was more profound. After hearing Vishnevskaya perform Mussorgsky's Songs and Dances of Death, he orchestrated the cycle for her and later dedicated his satires to her. She also became closely associated with his 14th Symphony. There was something in Vishnevskaya's dramatic temperament that was particularly suited to Shostakovich's musical world. She could confront suffering without making it beautiful or comfortable, preserving its ambiguity even at moments of extraordinary vocal intensity. This affinity reached its most revealing point in Lady Macbeth of the Mtsensk district. Katerina Ismailova, the individual against the collective. Katerina inhabits a world designed to contain her, from the confines of her marriage to the violence of the society around her. Vishnevskaya made the personality struggling against these constraints almost violently present. Katerina was not simply a victim. Her insistence on wanting and acting for herself became a form of power the collective could not safely contain. It would be too simple to turn Katerina into an allegory for Vishnevskaya's later confrontation with the Soviet state. Yet performer and character shared a dramatic principle. the insistence of the individual against forces demanding conformity. This principle was already visible in Vishnevskaya's own professional life. She had never been an especially convenient prima donna. At artistic councils and meetings, whether at the theater or within the Ministry of Culture, she could find herself alone in sharply criticizing what others were prepared to praise. The Soviet system was perfectly capable of celebrating exceptional talent. Indeed, the Bolshoi was one of its great international showcases. What was more difficult to accommodate was the private power of an artist who insisted on remaining an individual. Years later, this conflict between individual and collective would cease to belong exclusively to the stage, when the voice became political. In the late 1960s, Vishnevskaya and Rostropovich became close to the increasingly persecuted writer Alexander Solzhenitsyn, whom they sheltered at their dacha. Rostropovich publicly defended Solzhenitsyn after the writer was expelled from the Soviet Writers' Union, most famously in his 1970 open letter defending artistic freedom. From then on, official pressure intensified, and Vishnevskaya's name largely disappeared from the Soviet media. In 1974, Vishnevskaya and Rostropovich left the Soviet Union with their children. What initially appeared to be a period abroad gradually became exile. In 1977, Rostropovich became the music director of the National Symphony Orchestra in Washington, a position he held for 17 years. In 1978, the Soviet state made the rupture official. Vishnevskaya and Rostropovich were deprived of their Soviet citizenship. For a singer whose artistic identity was inseparable from Russian opera, Russian poetry, and Russian musical culture, the punishment contained a particular cruelty. The state that had once found their independence intolerable now sought to reclaim them as part of Russia's national culture. What it could not so easily remove was her voice from the culture she represented. The prima donna in exile. Vishnevskaya's international career did not end with the loss of her Soviet citizenship. In the West, she continued to perform and made major recordings including War and Peace, The Queen of Spades, and Lady Macbeth of Mtsensk, preserving Russian repertoire outside the country that had stripped her of citizenship. By the beginning of the 1990s, the political world that had expelled them was collapsing. Vishnevskaya and Rostropovich returned to Russia, and their citizenship and state honors were restored. They had not asked for either. There is an irony in this gesture. The state that had once decided that their independence made them intolerable now sought to reclaim them as part of Russia's national culture. A voice that could not be contained. Talent alone does not explain Vishnevskaya. Without the formidable personality behind the voice, the girl who survived the poverty, upheaval, and devastation of her youth could hardly have risen to the heights of international opera. She was not simply a great soprano, but an individual in the most uncompromising sense of the word. Her greatest roles resisted easy categorization. Vishnevskaya gave her heroines an interior life capable of resisting the structures surrounding them. In Katerina Ismailova, that struggle reached its most violent expression. Katerina matters not because the singer and character were somehow the same, but because the role illuminates a principle underlying much of Vishnevskaya's artistry. Personality itself could be a form of power. Outside the theater, Vishnevskaya proved equally unwilling to perform the role expected of a Soviet prima donna. She spoke when silence would have been safer, stood beside those whom the state had chosen to persecute, and ultimately accepted exile rather than surrender the independence on which her identity depended. The Soviet state could celebrate Vishnevskaya's voice as an emblem of national prestige. What it could not control was the woman behind it. A century after her birth, this may be what makes Vishnevskaya's voice so compelling. Its power was never simply a matter of volume, range, or timbre. Vishnevskaya possessed that rarer kind of voice, one inseparable from a personality, and therefore impossible to silence completely. Categories. Editorials.